Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Well, good evening. Welcome to another weekly Booker T. Washington Speaks show. This is our African-American Family Room Forum, and we're going to bring on our co-host at this time, Dr. Haleem Mustafa, to open up the show. But we want to, before we get started, we want to in advance say Happy Mother's Day to all of you ladies. Every lady is a mother in a real sense. And so for all of you that have your own children or those who are helping to raise children, because it does take a village, and we need all of the ladies to help raise all of our children, to start them off in the right direction and to keep them going in the godly direction that they were designed for. So again, happy, happy Mother's Day. Now I want to turn the mic over to Dr. Haleem Mustafa to open up the show. Welcome, Dr. Haleem Mustafa, our co-host.
Yes, sir, Professor. This is a wonderful day here. I'm here in California, Northern California, in a little town, Redwood City. It's not a little town, and it's nice, sunny, sunny skies, no cold, and so no arthritis problems for me today. And I like to say, in opening, I like to be open in prayer, if that's okay, sir.
You please do that. Yes, of course.
Yes, excellent, excellent. I'm going to say it in Arabic and English, so please join me, if you will, in your silent thoughts. Ayyudu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahir Rabbil Alamin. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki yawmiddin, Iyaka na'budu wa Iyaka nasta'in, Ihdina siratal mustaqim, siratal ladhina an'amta 'alayhim, ghayril maghdubi 'alayhim waladdallin. Amin. The translation of that Arabic prayer is in English. It says, first of all, I seek refuge with God from the cursed devil Satan. What's the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment? Thee alone do we worship, thy aid do we seek. Show us the straight way, the way on those whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, those whose portion is not wrath and who go not astray. Amen. Amen. Let it be so. Today is Mother's Day, and I want to extend to the Mother's Day thought, too, is that, you know, my mother, yesterday was her birthday, and she's no longer here physically, but I know spiritually she is still here with me, because the thoughts of what she's done and to bring me into life, and then also to help us survive and help me, you know, in terms of the things that I needed to do to grow up in her eyes as a young man who was her oldest son, when she saw me as her father. As a young man, right? So I come from welfare background. Just a little point of reference there. Welfare mothers do well in raising children. So tonight's topic is going to be, should black people complain about unfair treatment, especially by the police, when they are in the wrong? What kind of message is that sending to our children? So that's the topic for tonight. And certainly, sir, I do have some things I can say on this one here, but I'm going to roll the ball back to you and let you decide which direction you want to take, sir.
Okay, well, we're actually waiting for more guests to come on, so hold your point for just a few more minutes so that you can share it with the other guests as they tune in and come online. So we'll get to that, because I know from having talked with you earlier that you have some very profound thoughts on the topic, and we definitely want you to share them with our global audience. But before we get into the topic itself, I do want to ask you a question. The question is, why, when you began the prayer, and this is not in any way a criticism, I love to hear the opening prayer and all of the Quranic prayers, chanted, as they say, chanted or recited in the Arabic. And matter of fact, many times when I'm driving, just to relax my mind as I'm going into work and coming home from work, I'll play the Quranic recitation in Arabic because it is very relaxing. But I wanted to ask you, why do you recite it in Arabic? Is it because it sounds pretty or because it has a special meaning when it's recited in Arabic?
Well, for me, sir, I've evolved my understanding of the Arabic word, so I'm saying something that I do understand what it is. It's not gibberish from me perspective, but people who recite things and don't really know what they're saying in terms of the translation, in terms of the understanding, I think that is wrong, and I wouldn't do that unless I really understood it. So in saying those words are very powerful in unifying the thought process and the focus as human beings in terms of our perspective in being under the rule of a divine order. That's how it is, sir.
Okay, well, that's fine. Well, thank you for that explanation. I want to welcome one of our regular panelists that's been with us now for almost a year, and we want to say thank you for joining us again as our regular panelist, Mr. Pianchi, and we certainly are glad to see you on the screen in my studio. I saw we came on. So how are you doing this evening, sir?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Just got through battling some carpenter bees.
Oh, no.
And, I got to get back at them probably tomorrow. I got to get some more ammunition.
Yeah, what kind of ammunition, if you don't mind telling our audience, do you recommend for that?
AR-15.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's good to know. Okay. Yeah.
That wasp and whatever, that stuff don't work. They just laugh at it. I got some carburetor cleaner and sprayed that on. They just...
Oh, really?
So I got some to get.
Wow.
Well, yeah, they flew off. One flew off. I think he came back though. I'm gonna get a power pressure sprayer.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
and
that's probably
some stuff
in. Yeah, and not mess down or whatever they call it, a little mud.
And it's not unless you know what they do, they bore in your wood.
Oh, actually bore inside the wood. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Well, you definitely want to clean those out. Once you get them away, are you going to stick something up in the hose?
I'm going to fill the hose up with some sort of compound or material that's made for that it expands
and
add the structural integrity back to the spot.
Well, yeah, that's right. You're thinking about the whole circle of possibilities. That's good. Well, we have another guest that just joined us. We want to welcome you to our show, Booker T. Washington Speaks, the African American Family Forum. And this guest hopefully will actually join our discussion. We often have many guests that will join just to listen, but we would love to have everyone's point of view, especially on this critically important topic that we're going to be discussing tonight. And Brother Dr. Haleem, our co-host, is here, and we'd like for you to restate the topic, Dr. Haleem.
Yes, sir. The topic is, should black people complain about unfair treatment, especially by the police, when they are in the wrong? What kind of message is that sending to our children? That's the topic.
Thank you. So I'm sure that is a subject that will stir up a lot of controversial feedback, depending on who you ask. And so I'm just going to start it up just to get things kicked off. We hear oftentimes these stories about our people feeling like we've been victimized, we've been mistreated, we've been oppressed, and when the story is investigated, it's something that we did to get things moving in that direction. One story that I'm going to tell you that's not necessarily a true story out of the newspaper, but it's definitely something that could easily happen. So let me share this with you. We have someone who knows that they're supposed to be at work, at their desk, or in the cubicle at 9 o'clock in the morning. But they leave the house a little bit late, and by the way, happens to be an African-American, male or female, it doesn't matter about the gender. But they happen to decide that they need to get a Starbucks before they get to work, and they're really rushing, and they see that the available legal parking spaces in front of Starbucks have been occupied, so they park in a tow-away zone, a handicapped zone or some other tow-away zone in front of the store. They go in there and they stand in line for 10 or 15 minutes until they get their coffee. When they go back outside, they see that there's a car boot that the Meter Maid people have put have had a car boot put on their car, and they can't drive it away. So they call a cab or they hail a cab, and they get to work 10 minutes late. And they get fired. This company states that they have a very strict on-time attendance policy, and this individual gets fired. And this individual's protest is that a couple of days ago, this white guy or this white lady was 10 or 15 minutes late, and the white person did not get fired. So obviously, the whole issue is about race, and the whole issue is about unfair treatment because our personality is, who we're talking about is a black person. So this person starts making a big issue, telling everybody at the church, telling everybody at the PTA, telling everybody in the neighborhood how badly they were treated because now they're out of a job. And white people just don't want to do right because they fire black people on the spot just for anything. Now, what does that attitude tell you when that individual should have known when they stop there and they park in that illegal parking space that something like this possibly could happen, but yet they want to blame the boss for firing them? Now, I didn't mention this person might have been late before, but even so, even if they'd never been late before, if the person wanted to enforce this rule and fire them, who should really be at fault? Who should really be blamed? So just thought I'd bring that up to get a good conversation going. We want to welcome Sister Baena. Sister Baena, happy Mother's Day in advance. You know, it's a sad time in a sense, I'm sure, for you. But at the same time, we have to realize that motherhood doesn't stop for a woman ever, because we all know that without the ladies in our community mothering all of us, it would be a very sad place to live. So we want to wish you happy Mother's Day. We want to thank you personally for what you have done in the past for our family here when we had the children with us, and how you stepped right in and helped to mother them when Jackie was unable because of, you know, being in the hospital. We thank God for people like you, mothers like you, that can step in and be mothers to anyone's children. And we thank all of you ladies out there listening for your motherhood. And especially want to thank my beautiful wife for the mother she's been to my son and even to me, if you understand what I mean. So we heard the little example story that I gave, and we are ready for your feedback. So we want to start with our co-host first, and then we'll ask those who are signed in for your opinion. So, Dr. Ali Mustafa, what is your opinion about it?
Well, yes, can you hear me okay? I got my headset on, so if it's not, I'm going to
Yeah, yeah,
the phone.
I just
is
noticed
okay?
The volume went down.
Okay, I'll change,
I'm
going directly to my phone, okay, directly to my phone.
So I'm a former
cop. Number one, so I understand the legalities and both the spirit and the letter of the law. Now, some instances, you really can't turn your back on that because that red zone that they're parked in might have been for handicap, disrespect to people who are handicapped, It might have been for a safety or a fire lane in case a fire happens. A fire truck can pull up in there. So there's a lot of reasons for those red zones being there. And it's a clear indication from my perspective that, you know, unless the person has a really good reason to say that they would park there, to give them a ticket, right? And then, of course, the repercussions can be the toll, depending on circumstance. If they had a lot of outstanding tickets on their car, fine. That's another escalation. If not, a ticket that will cost you in California at least to almost $200 for that type of violation. So I would put onus on the owner or the driver for their being too lax. And I've seen it happen myself a number of times in both black, white, Mexican, et cetera, other races having the same problem, getting chastised verbally. They're getting chastised verbally. There's never a ticket most of the time issued. It's just a verbal chastisement in a very nice and respectful way. And if, of course, that person, you know, continues in terms of the parking, the police officers are very aware as to what happens on those kind of stores there, as to who's the daily customers and stuff. So and then, of course, that prolonged or that continued behavior will warrant the next level of a punishment. That's my opening comments related to that topic, sir.
Okay. I do want to remind our audience to listen to Dr. Haleem that the real issue in the story that I gave, it was not about the person getting booted and not being able to drive the car away and being able to get to work on time. It was about the person getting fired because they were late and them accusing the employer of being racist because they fired the person when the person was late due to something that they had done wrong, i.e. they parked in the illegal zone, got booted, wasn't able to drive the car to get to work on time, had to call a taxi, and they got there late. So the real issue is not an issue of them parking illegally or getting booted. That's what caused the problem. But the real deal is that they were making a big racist issue out of it because they got fired as a result of their own malfeasance. So let's look at it from that point of view. The question is, hold on, please. Yeah, please.
Yes.
I want to reiterate, we've had other people join, and I want to make sure they understand the topic, so I'll reiterate it myself this time. Should black people complain about unfair treatment when we are in the wrong? And what kind of message does that send to our children? Let me just elaborate just one moment. If this particular individual that got fired goes home and starts making a big ruckus, and complaining and saying to the kids that they don't have a job anymore because of how racist white people are, and you got to be careful because you can't trust white people, and yada, yada, yada. And the kids are saying the white people did daddy wrong, but really that is not telling those kids that daddy was the one that started it. Or even if daddy tells the kids what happened, the dad is downplaying the fact that if they hadn't been parked illegally, all this wouldn't have happened. So now the kid is thinking, well, any time that they do something wrong and they get penalized by the white people, it's not their fault, it's the white people's fault. And so that's a bad message to send our kids. So I just wanted to put that out there. You were going to say something in response, Dr. Ali?
Yes, sir. I just want to say certainly that onus is on the person who actually made the violation. Can't blame it on the police. They're doing their job, and of course your job as a citizen, private citizen, is to comply with the laws. That's a fact. Now, a lot of times our people, black people, are very sensitive to racism and the subtleties it has. Certainly it may have some, but it's really, in this case here, it has no merit. So ownership, truth of the matter, has to be expressed, and a lot of times truth hurts, and that's what happened in that situation. Yeah. Where a person feels they have to tell their children a lie to make them feel good about themselves, get being their guilt. That's it, sir.
Okay, remember this now, folks. Wait a minute,
can
hold
I
on
say
a second.
Something?
Yeah, but just give me a second. I want to clear up something. The issue here is not about the police at all. We're not talking about the police here. We're talking about
I move past that.
Fire this individual because they're late for work. But they're late for work because they got their car booted. Because they were in the bad parking zones. It's not about the police. It's about the employer being accused of racism and unfair treatment because they fired this person because the person comes in late. But the person got late because of something they did. Okay, well, let's hear from Sister Diana. Just give her a shot because she just wants to come in. I want to say that. Okay.
Okay. Now, thank you for your comments about Mother's Day and all that. Thank you so much. But well, let me just understand exactly what you said at first. You said that this person knows he has to be to work at a certain time. He goes, but he's got to have his Starbucks first, and he can't find a parking space. So, okay, he's not really concerned about being late for work. He wants to. I think African American people have a tendency not to want to delay gratification. They want instant gratification. I noticed this as a part of. I don't know what that is, but it seems like undisciplined people tend to want instant gratification. They have no self-discipline. They don't have to. They don't want to wait. They want it right now. Okay, that out of the way. And I think you also said that he accused the employer of being biased because someone else comes to work late all the time, but they're Caucasian and they never got fired, a woman or something, I think you said, to that effect. Well, I also realized that in this society, we, the so-called white privileged, white supremacists, or people who are not melanated, have a set of rules for themselves, and they have a set of rules for people who are melanated. And they make up rules and laws as they go along. They change them whenever they feel like it. So now this person, I don't know how old they are, but a lot of things you learn, you know, with experience and age, you know, or observation. So I don't know how old the person was, but if they had a family and they know that they have to be to work on time, you know, like my mom always taught us to be to work either half an hour early or an hour early. Always be to work early. That way you don't have to worry about being late. So everybody hasn't been, you know, taught by their parents to behave that way or look at their work, you know, as an extension of themselves and who they are. You know, it's just so I don't know what this. I think age has a lot to do with maturity, maybe not anymore. I don't even know anymore. But this person should have been to work early. Then they would not have had to worry about being late or getting fired. They could have left home early, gone and got their little latte or whatever they wanted. They're still early, get to work on time. So a lot of people don't understand what ethic is. There's a whole lot of stuff going on in that situation right there. So I think the person was just very undisciplined and not thinking and wanting instant gratification. So I think we have to learn that sometimes you have to wait. You can't always have instant gratification. And then you also have to realize that we live in a society that has two sets of rules. And make up rules and laws as they go along. That's what I have to say about that.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Bain. Would anybody else like to offer an opinion about the topic? Okay, well, it looks like we've exhausted all of the opinions on the topic.
My mute was on. What I was attempting to say to myself on the mute was that a lot of times the idea of blaming other people is a condition of what we've come from our slave experience. There's some behavior that's been kind of put in us, right, where we always feel we're being discriminated against, whether it's real or not. We still have obligation in terms of what is the integrity or the gentleman or the lady-like behavior. Because just like I would look at your great-grandfather as an example, right? He knew in the time that he was coming, there was like extreme racism, extreme hate. But despite that, he was able to orchestrate a plan of action that got results that established Tuskegee. that established the whole process without excuses, right? So how can we today, with freedom that we have the excuse-making today and give our young people that same bitter pill of hate? And what that does, that makes the young people become very complainers and very much antagonistic toward the authorities, right? So we don't need to go there as a people. What we need to do is just be integrity-driven, and that will get us past that point. That's it for now.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Arlene. Would anybody else like to offer an opinion about the topic? Let me repeat it, because we do have a global audience, and some people may have just logged in just a few minutes ago. So the topic is, should Black people complain about unfair treatment when we are in the wrong? And what kind of message does that send to our children?
Well, Mr. Washington, he still there?
Yes, sure. Go ahead, Mr. Bianchi.
Yeah, the example you gave, well, this person was clearly in the wrong. And I guess you're making mention that you're trying to put an example out there where they will be complaining and use the race card as an alibi to further bring more emphasis and try to gander up some sympathy. Now, the person, no matter who they were, they done the wrong thing, and they should be punished for what they done. And it's not all Black people. It's some, and it's not all Blacks, period. You know, a lot of people does this, but I can understand the conversation. It can be concentrated on Black people, Americans, those here in this country. So, yes, those things do happen. They should be punished for it. I tell you something else that needs to be looked at, too. These individuals that's driving their cars with no tags, expired paper tags, they need to be dealt with also. If they're pulled over and they don't have insurance, then their car needs to be towed and taken off the road, and they can get on by their business the best way that they can. And you see a lot of that that's going on when you drive around the hood, quote unquote. Now, yeah, it may go on in other areas too, but I think for the general location and the people that you're trying to make an example of in your program, we're talking about those that would be designated as Black in the hood. So that's what I wanted to add.
I like to say that Black people should be a better example to their children, and they need to teach their children that they must respect authority, because if we don't respect authority, we will have total chaos in our society. And we're almost at that point right now where we're about to become chaotic. And I think that whatever authority or laws or rules are in place right now, we have to respect them until we get something better, because if we don't, then we will have total chaos. And not only do Black people play the race card today, the white people, Caucasian people, they play the race card now too. And, hey, if they got away with it, let me try to see if I can get away with it too. We have stuff going on campuses right now where the racist remarks towards people is just getting out of control. Black face, this and that, you know, it's like this. Our society is on the verge of becoming chaotic because people do not respect authority. And I don't know where this trend to disrespect authority comes from, or maybe authority doesn't respect itself anymore. I don't know, but we're in a very bad state right now. Education, police department, science, medicine, math, everything, it's just like no respect for any kind of laws or authority. That's what I see happening out here. Jahalia, just like an ignorance wave taking over our society, a wave of ignorance coming where I don't respect any rules, I don't respect any laws, I'm going to do what I want to do. Oh, well, if this is going to happen, it's going to happen. If I'm going to jail, I'm going to jail. I mean, it's some kind of, I don't know what it is. It's just a complete disrespect for any kind of authority. And once people start disrespecting authority, we're going to have total chaos. And I think that's where we're headed right now. Not only in the African-American community, all the communities seem to be going through something. Our children are just so out of control, and it's because of the adults are not being the examples that they're supposed to be. So the children see your behavior, you're behaving so terribly, they're copying and emulating everything they see you do. And so, well, you don't respect the police, I'm not going to respect the police. You don't respect my teacher, I'm not going to respect my teacher. I mean, the children will tell you, telling the teachers at school now, I'll call my parents for you. What about it? You know, so where are we going? And this, what is, it's this is one incident that you were talking about, Imam Musa, but it's on so many other different levels that it hasn't even been addressed. And I don't even know how we're going to address it because we have people. The children are looking at our president, our beloved President Trump, all the stuff that he's going through. Look at all the people who come into his cabinet. They've got, I mean, where's the respect for, who's running, where's the authority now? Where is the authority? Where do we draw the line and say, well, this is the rule. These are the rules. We have to follow these rules until we get something better. It's just like, I don't know what's going on. We're in some kind of turmoil. So we have to be better parents. We have to be better teachers. We have to be better. We have to get better at what we do. We're supposed to be striving for excellence so that our children will strive for excellence because if we don't, we're going to have chaos in this world. And that's what it seems like we're headed for, chaos. Okay, thank you.
She makes a good point. You know, disrespect for the law. Look at the people that continue to come across the southern border as if they own the place. And then when they get here, they want to file suit in U.S. courts. They aren't U.S. citizens. The U.S. citizens have to pay for and tying up the courts. And I really appreciate the present administration for the efforts that they're doing to curtail that disrespect of the law. Just like the people in the example you gave was parking in a no parking zone for their convenience to go get their cup of Starbucks or whatever. The same thing has to apply when the kids see this vagrant disrespect of our country's borders and our country's laws. So, this can spread wider. People driving without licenses and no insurance, and it goes on and on. People come and they overstay their time that they're supposed to be here under all sorts of pretenses of spousal abuse back in their own country, gang warfare. Let me ask you a question. What if blacks in Chicago, say 5,000 of them, said we are tired and scared of the violence that we are experiencing, and they head down to Honduras or Ecuador or Nicaragua or Mexico and say, look, we're seeking asylum because we're fleeing violence. I wonder how open those countries would be to have 5,000, 10,000 blacks fleeing violence here, police brutality, going to those countries. Would that not make a good conversation?
That's good. I wanted to interject something, Brother Ali, right quick. You know, I've traveled extensively, as I understand that you have also, Mr. Bianchi, been in the military for 30 years. I've traveled to all but two of the continents. I've never been to Antarctica. Don't want to go, actually. Might be interested. Might be great, sites over there, but I'm not a fan of cold weather. And I've never been to Australia, which I would like to go there, but the other continents I've been to. And I have noticed as I've traveled to other countries that they have very strict border control, very strict border control. And the people at the customs or the stations where they check people into the country, they let you know that they don't play. You know, you don't have your paperwork right, you try to slip past your guards, you're going to be in some very, very serious trouble. And so that's the gold standard for what I would say national security at the borders. You know, is to take a firm, a hard stand, and vet the people that you are going to let come through those gates for a long time. You know, our gates have been like a sieve, the southern border especially, because people don't even go through the gates. They go around and come through whatever way they can. And I do agree, for the sake of control and national security, we need to enforce our border restrictions and our immigration laws. On the other hand, I do feel that, you know, we advertised for many years that America was a place of refuge, you know, give me your poor masses, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that was one of the things that we were famous for, was that people that wanted a better opportunity could come to America. But even when they had the immigration station at Ellis Island, and where the Statue of Liberty beckoned those masses, those hungry people to come, they still had a very serious vetting process. And I do agree that should continue. I didn't want to give a monologue. Does anyone else want to chime in? I think Dr. Aleem, you wanted to say something?
Yes, sir. I'm kind of going to go a little sentimental for a moment here, okay? So I call these POWs, which is like not it's a pearls of wisdom, but it also could be prisoners of war, right? So black people here are really prisoners of war from slaves, slave times, and also ex-slave times, right? So the power of our ancestors' prayers and our ancestors' sincerity in seeking help from God by working hard and smart when allowed, made progress, didn't have issues ourselves other than the hate of people who didn't like us because we were being resilient, right? So I know that right now the resilience of transferring this attitude to our young people is a missing link somehow. And I'm not sure. I think it might be the false worship that a lot of people are practicing, the fact that they're not really believing what they say, and all these things. The young people are looking at these things and seeing no activation of faith, like, for example, at the times of in the past of a lot of our black leaders then who were really activated on the principles of high purpose and tied to divine responsibility, as it says in the Constitution, that all mankind are one, right, in terms of that. So this is what I'm saying, that we got to get back to a square one again in terms of what is it we want our young people to be about. What is it that we want our community to be about? Which takes me to my next thought here, because I had put this together here today before I even knew what your topic was about, sir, professor. And I call it like community law and order comes from within the neighborhoods. So what I triggered this was that there's a lot of black-on-black crimes that shows the level of our sensitivity. And so in terms of stopping that, the police can't stop it. I was in police for 10 years, and the murder cap of these files was off the hook. And it's still going on right now today, because there's thugs going around killing people, and people know, but people don't say nothing, right? So the idea of community law and order comes from within, is saying that within the neighborhood, that people have to be concerned. Like, you can't go into an Italian community and sell no dope and do nothing wrong. They'll put some hurt on you, break your legs or something like that. That's the level of how they protect their communities from external and internal. So we have to learn these things. And so the idea is this. We're prisoners of war. We know that's a fact. Unfortunately, we were sold into slavery from our own blacks in Africa. And so the idea is having us evolve to a position of having ourselves become professionals of wealth, where we actually are professional folks and with wealthy folks, and we're doing the things that other communities do with their professional folks and wealthy folks, is to help others learn the process. So until we learn to show and reveal what it is to be successful, we already know what it's like to be a failure. So we show these what it's like to be a professional at a level, and then we'll see the scales of justice really change, because people that will love you more in a successful role that is progressive in the things for helping your communities, as opposed to just being successful in their community and nothing doing that for your own community. That's my comments.
I'd like to say this about the borders. I don't know what we're going to do about it, but something has to be done, because as quiet as it's kept in New York State, they're having a problem with that gang MS-13, I think you recall. They're going around recruiting young people in the neighborhood. And if the I think one of the initiation rites, you have to kill somebody, and they were killing, and may still
yeah,
be.
That's the Mexican mafia.
Following that, we were killing teenagers from school. The middle school students were being killed on their way home from school, walking home from school, as part of the initiation rite. And they were trying to track down the MS-13 people in New York State, especially on Long Island. I don't know about other communities around the country, but all I know is that MS-13, they're really dangerous, and I think Donald Trump had mentioned something that he was coming for them. I'm not sure what's going on with that, but we also we have a gang problem in the school. A lot of children are committing suicide because they're either going to join the gang or the gang has threatened them, and so the only way they see out is to take their own lives. We have a whole lot of things going on. That's what I'm saying. We're on the brink of chaos, and I don't even think people are aware, because they're either working or they're in their own world, or I don't know. They're not conscious of what's going on in our society. And I'm not just talking about African Americans, because, you know, we all have issues. These people, we got the opioid problem, we got the gang problem, we got the border problem. We got so much stuff going on. It's just unreal. Elderly abuse, I mean, abuse of the disabled. We got so much craziness going on. This is why I say we're at the brink of, it's like we're getting ready to fall over into hell. And people are not conscious that all this stuff is going on out here. It's unreal. I'm just like, what is going on? I don't know anymore. We're in the book.
Marvin Gaye says, what's going on? Sorry. Marvin Gaye says, what's going on in his song Best. You know, if you listen to that song, it's talking about some very key points. It's talking about some global things. It's talking about some local things. And it's talking more specifically to the idea of saving the children. So until we really learn to save the children, as people, as a species of people who understand the importance of children, we really haven't yet evolved as what we call refined people. Because every society knows they have to prepare the generation of children coming up to be this role models, these examples. And we're doing a piss-poor job. This society is doing a piss-poor job. I'm talking at all social realm levels. You have people at the upper echelon of this economics acting very thuggish themselves now. And it's a popular thing to be thuggish. It's a popular thing to be antagonistic. It's a popular thing to be disrespectful. So this is a temperament that comes from, I believe, from the churches, from the cynicism that they see in terms of the things that are happening with pastors and priests, in terms of their being sexually active with members of their churches and the other things that they're doing with the young boys, the priests and stuff. So all this stuff is really adding to this temperament of anger that you're sensing that this country has.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to actually mention before we end, we're going to be in about less than 10 minutes, we're just going to do an hour show tonight, is the fact that some things are not going to change in our lifetimes. And one is that there's always going to be evil in this society. The question is, how do we deal with the evil that is affecting our lives, that our people are bringing on ourselves? Now, you mentioned about the church leaders abusing the young children. And, of course, the issue that we heard about 10 years ago was the Catholic priests abusing the young boys. But now we hear about other types of abuse, including young women and the leaders of the church obviously are embarrassed when these things happen, but there doesn't seem to be any stopping this. It seems to be cascading. And within our community, one of the things that's happening is a lot of people don't see the church as a place of healing or sanctification. They see it as a place where you can go find a boyfriend or a girlfriend. You can go and listen to some good music for free. And you can go and meet a group of people that maybe will accept you for who you are. But the cancer of immorality, as you say, Sister Baida, seems to be getting wider and deeper. But I do want to return, as we get ready to wrap up, to the central issue. And the central issue deals with us blaming other people under the race card for things that we are responsible for bringing on ourselves. And the question that I have for our panel tonight is there anything that can be done by our educational leaders, religious leaders, political leaders to change this kind of attitude where everybody else is at fault, and even though we're really the ones that did it wrong, but we shouldn't be held accountable because it's a black and white thing. Any comments on that?
It's very
yes, I always got comments. Go ahead.
It's very difficult to try and correct anything in the African American or melanated people or black people be lacking black. That word black, when I think of the word black, it means be lacking. We're lacking something. Our moral conscience used to be much higher. And if you try and correct someone's child, the parent will get angry with you. Whereas before, when I was growing up, you didn't disrespect your teacher. You didn't get in trouble at school, because if you did, you knew when you went home you were going to be disciplined. And you got disciplined at school, you got disciplined again when you went home. And even in your neighborhood, if you disrespected your neighbors and they told your parents that you disrespected them in some way, you got disciplined. But you were allowed to be disciplined by your neighbor, and then you would get disciplined again by your parent. But if you try to do something like that today, there's so many consequences for it. It's almost like our society has given levy to bad behavior. It's okay to have bad behavior. If you are a youth, or if you are some kind of delinquent person, it's okay. If you try to correct your child, discipline your child in public, or raise your voice, or spank your child, or pop them on the hands, someone may call the police, and you will go to jail. And it's just crazy now. So I don't know where we're going to. Not only are the people abusing the children in the churches, they're abusing the children in the school. The teachers are having sex with their students, and it didn't just start. It's just that we have mass communication, so we know about all this stuff now. It's been going on all the time, but it's just that now we have mass communication, so it's more widespread. It's spreading faster. I don't know anymore. I don't know how are we going to restore? America needs a moral conscience. How are we going to restore the moral, not only in our community, the whole country needs a moral conscience. And we don't have that. How are we going to get our moral conscience back? Because if a person, if the country, the society doesn't have any morals, what's going to happen? And it's up to really, it's up to women to have higher morals. Because women are the moral peoples in society. So that says a lot about our society on women and their moral behavior. Because a man can go out there and do anything, and you can talk about him and blah, 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 and that's the end of that. But if a woman goes out and does things that men who are not morally conscious do, then we're the worst thing on the planet. And I understand that because women are the ones who teach the children first. And if the people are not teaching their children, why aren't they teaching their children? What's the problem? What is the problem? Is it because we have so many teenage mothers now? Is it because, what? I don't know anymore. It's just crazy. It's really crazy. And it doesn't have anything to do with what religion you are anymore either, because I have friends in all different kinds of religions, and they have issues too. So it's not. We just need a moral conscience. We need a moral rebirth in America to change all this craziness that's going on, so that people can start to rediscipline themselves or understand what. I don't even think people know what discipline means. I really don't. The children are so disrespectful to their parents, and the parents give in to them. And maybe it's true that Adam and Eve disrespected the Creator, and so as a result, our children are disrespecting us. You know, I don't know anymore. It's just horrors.
Well,
okay, thank you.
Sister, I don't want you to give up on it because you're too bright. You're very bright. You're very thoughtful. And so the thing is this, see, this whole idea of people want to make people become hopeless in the ideas of bringing salvation to the community. So I kind of look at the example, and I wasn't a part of this effort, but I know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as a person, one person made a difference, right? And he done things that today are still perplexing to me. How he mobilized black people right at a time when their depressions and stuff was going on, and he was able to get people to start thinking about better themselves and doing for their communities and their spirit of brotherly love toward all human beings except for those who are devil in their behavior. And it included the race of black people, the race of white people, everyone else who themselves are acting very, arrogant and kind of like not really being a human in terms of the sentiments. I just say this. We have to look back at history and take the best from the past and bring it forward to the future right now. That's my last comment.
Okay, well, let's go around. We're going to wrap up here in just a minute. I said we're going to do an hour tonight, and we've reached that hour point. But if anyone would like to make a final comment on the topic that was the primary topic tonight, but as we've said in the past, we are free to bring in other things that may be something that you want to discuss. So if you want to make a final comment on the topic or just give us a little short preview of what's on your mind, and maybe we can take it up as a topic next week. Let's go around. I don't have any further comments except to say, again, to all of the mothers of the world, we have a global audience, so we say to all of you, Happy Mother's Day, and may God bless you for all the good, for everything that you do for all of us. And that's my final comment. Does anyone else want to offer a last comment?
Well, you make a good comment. You know, the things that's been in the news last week, I agree with what Kanye West said myself. He didn't come out, and people should read what he said instead of taking these emotional positions and what he said about the people who's talking for 400 years. And his talks still go on today. But lucky thing is that all people, all blacks in the society of the United States are not acting in a certain way because they're different. And hopefully there will be some changes. You have to work for them, though. Nobody's going to do this for you. And the reality is everybody's not going to make it. Equal opportunities, but equal outcome is not guaranteed. Anyway, Mr. Washington, you have a nice evening.
Thank you, sir.
I want to just end our program. I want to wish everybody a wonderful, happy Mother's Day. And I'm sending that out with gentle effects. And I want everyone out there, every human being out there, can always remember you're beautiful, you're worthy, you're important, you're special, you're unique, you're wonderful, you're talented, and you're irreplaceable. Thank you.
Amen.
That's powerful. I'd just like to take this a moment just to announce something that I'm in the midst of working on right now. And if I could, sir, it's just real quick.
Yes, of course. Take your time. Go ahead.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Dr. Carver, as people may have heard me talk about before, he was the first American scientist and the first ever African slave to receive a federal holiday in America. And in 1945, this day was established, January 5th, his death day, on the campus of Tuskegee. So we're actually doing a national telethon to raise monies to support the Black family, Black community, and the Black youth. And the youth we're talking about going to K-12 and going on to the HBCU college network, more so than the private schools that are most occupied by a majority of Caucasian with Black. We want to nurture them into the HBCU system so we can do our part to help save that schools from defaulting. Because without those schools, we really don't have a whole lot, because we'd be assimilating ourselves into another structure of other people's interests, not based on our own interests. So this telethon is under the marketing advertisement of See the Light America 2019 telethon. And the goal is $1 billion over a 20-year period ending 2039. And we have we actually lined up a really nice marketing strategy, and we have people across the country participating on our conference call. And that conference call happens at 9 o'clock here. I'm in California now. So at 9 o'clock here in California, the time is 11 o'clock in the Central, and on the East Coast, it's actually 12 noon. So we have this wonderful discussion with people who are actually active and not just talking about things, working on things. And so, you know, we're having some people like Erica Badu's auntie, I believe. She's a very talented lady, and she's how to sing. So she's a part of our effort, and there's a lot of other people like that that are very successful in their own right, but knowing that we have to connect up beyond what we had before been divided and conquered. So the telethon is to bring issues to homelessness, hunger, the lack of our people having community interest to provide the cleanliness of the community, where we have to start taking ownership ourselves again. And I mention this because as I'm talking, I'm looking at what the Nation of Islam did under the leadership of the founder of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in terms of what his spirit was. And that spirit is very critical, because that is the same spirit that I believe, Professor, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your great-grandfather had in terms of doing for self without excuse. So today we have to show our young people that we have to mobilize ourselves. We have to get to the point we can see that we have more in common from different perspectives that we might think is different, but it's all the same thing. If we talk about raising families, we talk about having prosperous communities, and we're the only people, primarily Black people, ex-slaves Black people, who don't know how to work as a group. And so anyway, I'd invite anybody who would like to join in this conversation, you can call the number 833-HEAVEN-UP. That's 833, and Heaven Up would be 432-8368. But 833-HEAVEN-UP, or you can email me at Halim the Dream Builder. That's H-A-L-I-M the Dream Builder at gmail.com. And there's more than I'm talking right now, so I don't want to take the last time here in terms of exploiting this beautiful opportunity to share what's going on. But I thank everybody, and don't forget that we one day will be old and gray, and if we don't prepare our young people for that day to take over and lead us, then we are going to be a sorry race of people, as people have predicted us in the past history judgments.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're going to close now with an uplifting Melody. We want everyone to leave here going into the Mother's Day holiday with a good spirit. So we're going to close with our ending that we usually do, Lift Every Voice and Sing.